On Thursday, at exactly 8:28 a.m., the Earth's North Pole will stop just briefly as it begins to tilt again toward the sun. The winter solstice marks the longest night and the shortest day of the whole year. Thank goodness, right? We Southern Californians are an outdoors people. We get cranky when it's too dark to surf after work. I often think of my Norwegian ancestors, though, at this time of year. The capital city, Oslo, will get just under 6 hours of sun on Thursday. Imagine how we'd do here if the sun didn't come up until 9:30 in the morning and then was gone again by 2:30 in the afternoon. At Nordkap, the northernmost point in Norway, it's almost completely dark from November 20th until the 22nd of January. Long before Christianity spread through Europe, most of the people living in the northern regions held some form of midwinter festivities around the time of the winter solstice. The pagan Scandinavian and Germanic people celebrated a 12-day midwinter holiday called Yule. People brought greenery into their homes as a reminder that spring would come again. Evergreen branches and whole trees and holly with bright red berries. And they lit bonfires and Yule logs, symbols of the sun reborn at the solstice. They danced and sang and ate goodies and drank wine. People would stay up on the longest night to watch the sun rise and celebrate. Something in us needs to know that at the end of the longest night, there will be more light. I imagine those people living in the far north created these festivities around this time of year for a wide number of reasons. The long winters were a time of famine, and they needed to slaughter some of the livestock at this time anyway, because there wouldn't be enough food for them to graze on. Maybe the year's wine and ale had fermented to just the right fermentation and was ready to drink. Perhaps they instinctively knew that all the dancing would help to balance their melatonin and serotonin, which would help regulate their circadian rhythms. We now know that the decrease in sunlight causes a form of depression in some people called seasonal affective disorder. It could be that the festivities were a diversion from the malaise brought on by the darkness. 'Tis the season to be jolly. Ever since Thanksgiving, maybe even before, Christmas music has been blaring through the speakers in almost every store. And some of it is beautiful, brings me back to childhood, to hearing the choir singing on Christmas Eve by candlelight. But some of it is just awful. The other day I was in the hardware store and Alvin and the Chipmunks came on singing Christmas Time is Here. So I'm sorry for anybody I just gave that earworm to. I swear everyone in the store, it came on and everyone just made a beeline for the register to get out of there. There is quite a lot of pressure to feel cheery this time of year. So if you are grieving a loss, the relentless commercial merriment can begin to chafe and grow irritating. It can be helpful simply to acknowledge that this season can also be a tender time of sadness and grief. Many of us become nostalgic for times long past. We yearn for the happiness of a former period in our lives. We may grow wistful for the innocence of our childhood and youth. At times, the times that we had with loved ones who have passed on, and the relationships with people or communities that we have moved on from. I know that for my uncle, my mother's closest brother, every year at this time is painful for him as he misses his late wife, who killed herself on October 7th, 7 years ago. She had struggled with depression for years, and despite the prescription medications, despite her loving relationship with my uncle, despite the birth of a beautiful new grandbaby and a devoted Labrador puppy who followed her everywhere she went, even with all of this love in her life, she was overwhelmed with anguish that I can't even begin to imagine. The depression, like darkness, had overtaken all of the light in her life, blinded her to the beauty all around her. The Reverend Dr. Rebecca Parker is the past president of Star King School for the Ministry, the seminary that I attended. Several years ago, she co-authored a book called Proverbs of Ashes about violence and suffering and the search for what it is that saves us. In the book, she shares some of her own personal story of having been abused as a child and the torment that it caused her throughout her life. I want to tell you just one story from that book that has deeply affected me. So I'm going to tell it in her own words. One night I came to the end of my will to live. I just wanted the anguish to stop. It was spring, a cold, clear night. I lived at the top of the hill above Lake Union, and sometime after midnight I left my house and started walking down the hill. The water would be cold enough. I could walk into it, then swim, and then let go, sink down into the darkness, and go home to God. The thought was comforting. I had no second thoughts. I was set on my course. At the bottom of the hill, I had only the small grassy rise at the edge of Kite Hill to cross before I came to the water's edge. I crested the familiar rise and began the descent to the welcoming water when I was caught short by a barrier that hadn't been there before. It looked like a long line of oddly shaped sawhorses, laid out to the left and to the right, the width of the grassy field. In the dark, I couldn't see a way to get around either end, but it looked like I could climb over the middle. I quickened my pace, impelled by the grief that wouldn't let go of me. As I got closer, the dark forms before my eyes seemed to be moving. I squinted to understand what I was seeing. The odd, bunchy shapes were a line of human beings bundled up in parkas and hats. The stick shapes weren't sawhorses. They were telescopes. It was the Seattle Astronomy Club. Before I could make my way through the line, one of them looked up from his eyeglass and, presuming me to be an astronomer, said with enthusiasm, "I've got it focused perfectly on Jupiter. Come take a look." Well, I didn't want to be rude or give away my reason for being there, so I bent down and I looked through the telescope. There was Jupiter, banded, red, and glowing. "Isn't it great?" he said. It was great. Jupiter was beautiful through the telescope. The amateur astronomer focusing the lens didn't know me. He didn't know why I was there. He assumed I was there because the night sky was a wonder to behold. Across the sheen of dark water, the lights of the city shimmered. Overhead, the sky was wild with pinpoints of fire. I couldn't kill myself in the presence of these people who had gotten up in the middle of a cold spring night with their home-built Radio Shack telescopes to look at the planets and the stars. At this point, as she tells it, a poem came to Rebecca's mind. "Sure, on this shining night of star-made shadows round, kindness must watch for me. This side the ground, hearts all whole, sure on this shining night, I weep for wonder." She says, "We had sung those words in church choir, and I knew them by heart. The warmth of Samuel Barber's music and the sweetness of James Agee's poetry embraced that moment, held my life in that moment when I could not hold myself. The poets, the amateur scientists, and the splendid night sky kept me in this world." Rebecca's reflections of what happened for her in that moment give us some insights into depression. She writes, "It would be wrong to think of this moment as one in which joy triumphed over despair or love of life defeated desire for death. Such a view assumes that bad feelings need to be excised or suppressed by stronger, better feelings. I did not defeat negative feelings of anguish and despair because I saw something more lovely and good. Rather, I became able to feel more. My feelings broadened. Pain, sadness, and despair were not eliminated or overcome. I embraced them with a larger heart. My aunt also chose the dark, cold waters of a lake in which to end her life. How my own family wishes there had been something, anything, along the shores of Lake Superior to keep her in this world, to expand her feeling, to allow her to see the joy alongside the despair, something that would have enabled her to hold both the pain and the love in her life. But it seems there wasn't. There was no way to reach into the darkness in which she was ensconced. My aunt's death is both a tragedy and a mystery to those of us who knew and loved her. It becomes clear why, in a season of darkness, our ancient ancestors created celebrations that centered greenery and fire, symbols of life and vitality. Their parties had music and singing and dancing, rich, delicious food and intoxicating drinks. People played silly games and probably flirted with one another. It was a serious party, a festival of hope, a giant yes to life. The wheel of the world has turned, and days would once again begin to grow brighter, and everything that seemed so difficult in the darkness would surely get better. Here's what I know is true. That vitality, that life force, is always within us. Sometimes we become so outwardly focused, so concerned with what other people think, trying to gain approval or to prove our worth, that the flames within us all but go out. It can feel like you're trying to get through life running on nothing but fumes. Nothing dampens our life fire, drains our mental and emotional batteries more than guilt and shame. So what I'm saying is that there is still hope. There is always hope. The embers can be fanned into flames again. You can once again feel the heat and the warmth and the life-giving fire of love and connection. You stoke that inner blaze by bringing your awareness to the love in your life, to nurturing your relationships. Notice when your attention moves into those areas where your life force starts to drain, when you're ruminating on things in the past, worrying about the future, agonizing about what others might be thinking about you. Just stop. Call your attention back to the present moment, to your breath, to your heartbeat. Ask that your higher self, your own connection to wisdom, to unlimited love, take over. Get your worried little ego self out of the driver's seat and allow the pure fiery energy of the source of life to resume control. At this time of the winter solstice, when the earth would seem to be overtaken by darkness and your own tender heart might feel a little dim, light a candle. We can trust the stillness, the quiet, and the dark of this time of year to hold us and to carry us. We can have faith in that. We can have faith that there is a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable. There is sorrow beyond all grief, which leads to joy, and a fragility out of which emerges strength. From the miracle of the Hanukkah oil to the star over the manger, remember there is a reason that this is a season of hope, of light overtaking the darkness. May we too, no matter our tradition, fan our inner coals of joy and happiness into flame. Tune ourselves to the vibratory hum of the universe. Open all of our channels so that the energy of love can flow freely, soothing and invigorating every cell and molecule in your being. May we allow this season to open our hearts. May we be willing to feel all the feels, and especially to reach out to the ones that we love and tell them that we love them. I love you. Amen, and blessed be.